Stephen Tyrone Johns died yesterday at George Washington University Hospital here in Washington, D.C., an innocent life lost in an ugly act of violence at a place many consider sacred. At about 12:40 yesterday afternoon, a man carrying a rifle walked into the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum and shot Stephen Johns. Some of his fellow security guards fired back. Suspect James von Brunn remains in critical condition today and faces murder charges. Since the shooting, he's been identified as a white supremacist and anti-Semite. In honor of Mr. Johns, the Holocaust Museum is closed today with its flags lowered to half-staff. NPR News analyst Ted Koppel presided as master of ceremonies when the museum first opened 16 years ago. Then-President Bill Clinton spoke at that event, as did Elie Wiesel, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate and Holocaust survivor, is the founding chairman of the museum, and both of them join us now. First, let me thank Elie Wiesel for taking the time as he rushes to catch a flight. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
And I wonder, what was your initial reaction when you heard the news yesterday?
Shock and disbelief. Why an 88-year-old man who was dead? Why should a man live his life in hate, practice hate, and destroy everything in the name of hate? But to go to the Holocaust Museum, which has been like built and conceived and built to fight hatred in the world, it's almost unbelievable.
Are you enough of a believer in the persuasive powers of that museum that had he not entered with a rifle and gone through and walked through it, that you might have had some effect on him?
Yes, but you know, nobody would have really thought that anyone would do that. I know the activity there is good. The administration of the museum is excellent. And I know that the people that are working there to protect the museum and its visitors and its staff against hatred. But what can you do if a person wants to know what he is doing? Again, this 88-year-old man, why should anyone suspect an 88-year-old man of doing that? So the age actually was his best shelter and his best mask. At the same time, was he crazy? You know, I think they are morally ill.
And we're obviously having difficulties, technical difficulties, with the cell phone of Elie Wiesel. He's in a car on his way to a flight, and we're going to try to reestablish contact and see if we can get up a phone line. And Ted Koppel, I wanted to ask you, we mentioned the opening ceremonies for this museum 16 years ago. You were master of ceremonies. I wonder if you could recreate that scene for us.
Well, it is important to recreate it, Neil, because it was an extraordinary moment. Elie Wiesel was, as you mentioned, one of the speakers, as was then-President Clinton. It was a miserable day, and the ceremony was held outside behind the museum, behind the Holocaust Museum, and the audience was getting soaking wet, and so were the speakers. The White House staff for President Clinton had taken the precaution of putting his speech between sheets of plastic in a plastic folder, so he was still able to read his remarks. Elie Wiesel was there, though, with his speech, simply the sheets of paper. And as he began to speak, the sheets of paper became so soaking wet that he could no longer read what he had written. And he gave a completely extemporaneous speech at that point, in which he came very close to lecturing President Clinton, who was seated just behind him, and saying this was at the time of the tragic events in Kosovo, where people were being killed, where, again, for ethnic reasons, there were policies of ethnic cleansing and purification. And Elie spoke out against all of that and made the point to the President of the United States that the United States had a moral responsibility to become involved in some fashion in what was happening in Kosovo, and to prevent it, to stop it. And the mere fact that this speech was being given by the man who lost members of his own family in the death camps of Europe, in the shadow of this new museum, the Holocaust Museum, had enormous power. And indeed, the United States did become militarily involved. I will never know to what degree Elie Wiesel's speech played a role in that, but I have to believe it played some role.
And Elie Wiesel is back with us. We hope the line has improved. And I wonder,
Pat, I can say, I heard you. Clinton, Bill, President Clinton told me, and publicly, that actually that was a turning point. That speech was the turning point. And I'm so glad that I did it, although you remember that it was raining. It was raining, and I couldn't even read my prepared text, so I had to improvise something. And he did, of course. I had to speak about Kosovo, about Bosnia. But it worked. A few times, President Clinton told me that speech made a difference. He said that changed America's policy.
And that, it seems to me, is the purpose of such places, yes, to remember what happened, but not merely as a moment of historical crime, but to learn the lesson and to say never again.
Well, of course, otherwise why remember? Memory is not something which is stifling. Memory must be creative. Memory is what lives in the present from the past in order to prevent the past from becoming overpowering when it is evil. And that was the goal. When we began, when I began under Carter, Carter was the one actually who appointed me chairman of the President's Commission on the Holocaust, and we began work on it. But right away, we created a committee on conscience to say we have to be careful and see that our lesson should apply to all that is happening in the world. And sometimes it works. But at the same time, look, and there is, on the other hand, our message, because it's a message of humanity, it's a message of tolerance, of peace, of remembrance, of solidarity, appealed to this man just the opposite, to the opposite effect. It's because he heard what people were saying. He wanted to kill and destroy. Thank God that he was actually prevented from doing what he could have done, killing children. There were children there. So this man, is when he did this, it's true, I was shocked. But at the same time, there's a certain crazy, morally crazy element to it.
Last week, you were with President Obama when he visited the Nazi death camp at Buchenwald after his speech in Cairo. And he was saying that the existence of that place and sadly too many others served to announce to the world irrefutable evidence that these things did happen, that we must learn the lessons. Yet he says that in a world where Holocaust denial continues to be virulent. Why, after all this time, do you think people choose to disbelieve the truth?
Let's say there are very few. Some of them, of course, have important positions. Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, is president of Iran, and he's the number one Holocaust denier in the world. So if a president of Iran can say that, why shouldn't this guy in Washington believe in it? But there are not that many. Today, really, they are so marginal. They are dangerous because they are there and they exist. They shouldn't. But in general, never before have so many schools taught lessons on the Holocaust, so many conferences taking place, so many books written, so many programs on television and radio being broadcast. Never before has the awareness been so strong, so powerful, and so universal.
Ted Koppel, I wanted to bring you in here.
Well, if I could just add this thought. It seems to me that the most important thing we can do at this point is to focus on the victim of what happened yesterday, the courageous security guard who gave up his life to protect others. And I think the worst thing we can do is to make, in a sense, to blend the two parts of this program that we've been talking about, to give any kind of notoriety, let alone fame, to the man who came in to do the killing. The importance of the Holocaust Museum is that it focuses on the victims of hatred, that it focuses on those innocent victims who were killed in spite of anything that they had done. And the danger is that the emphasis is put on those who performed the acts at the cost of ignoring those who fell victim to those acts.
I fully believe that you are right. And I agree with you that we should not give him too much notoriety, because that's what he wants. He wants to be known. He wants even the trial when it will take place. He will use that trial, of course, to make his own propaganda and say that he will invoke the freedom of speech and so forth. But trial is one thing; it's unavoidable. But the press should not really. I agree. Should not give him too much celebrity, so to speak.
Let me act as perhaps the devil's advocate here. Ted, you were executive producer of Nightline as well as the host of the program.
No, I was not executive producer. I was managing editor.
Well, managing editor then in a position to have a strong voice in deciding what went on the air.
Sure.
And in that role, you would have almost certainly had someone go out and find out who this man was, what organizations he belonged to, whether he was in contact with others, whether this was indeed a lone gunman. There would
Absolutely.
Have been stories.
Absolutely. And we would have done the story, and we would have mentioned his background, and we would have given his name. What I'm saying, though, is that there is a significant difference between reporting the news, and that is telling people who was involved, what his background is. Having done that, having put that into the newspaper, I don't think there's any particular need then to go on talking about who he was and what his background was and all these different fascist organizations that he belonged to. I don't think there's any particular need to go on doing that in the future. As news people, we are committed to at least clarifying what happened and who was responsible.
But at the same time, we should know whether he was alone and who were his accomplices, if there were any, and whatever programs he had. I heard that he had a notebook with names, all kinds of names, who knows what he wanted to do to the people whose names he had in the phone, in his phone book. That we should know. But that is for the FBI and for the police to work on, and I'm sure they'll do well. They always do well. But not to make him a kind of celebrity. He is not. He is a morally sick man who seeks to humiliate people, who seeks to shame people, who seeks to destroy memories of the people.
Ali Wiesel, we know you're on your way to catch a flight. We're going to thank you for your time today. We do appreciate it.
Thank you very, very much. And bye-bye, Ted. Bye.
Bye-bye, Ali.
Ali Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor and, of course, Nobel Prize laureate, founding chairman of the United States Holocaust Memorial Council, and he joined us by phone. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ted Koppel, this goes into another area in terms of news coverage. When you encounter someone like Mr. Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran in this election that's coming up tomorrow in that country, is at least in part about his role as the most prominent Holocaust denier in the world, though not the only one. What part of that do you play in that story? And if you get the chance to interview someone like him, how much do you talk to him about it?
Oh, I think that is certainly one of half a dozen or a dozen legitimate major issues that you have to raise with him. His importance, after all, is not as an individual, but as the president of Iran. In that capacity, he carries a weight, and his words carry a weight that would be denied him, that will be denied him, for example, if he's defeated in the election tomorrow. So obviously, you have to talk about it. I don't think you need to spend more than 5 minutes on the subject in a half-hour interview.
And as we go through this, there has been. We have to be careful. There was the death of an abortion doctor just a couple of weeks ago in Kansas, and you never want to say, here are two incidents, and the shooting of recruiting U.S. Army members at a recruiting station as well, and to say, look, there's been a spate of renewed political violence. Nevertheless, you sometimes look at this country and wonder about people who are disturbed and about the political motivation sometimes behind these sorts of incidents, and trying to sort out how much is, as Ali Wiesel was saying, a moral sickness and how much is the responsibility of our politics.
Look, there is a great deal of hate speech in this country, no question about it. But I think to attach that to either side of the political spectrum is to make a huge mistake. By and large, these are people who belong in a category of their own. I'm not going to classify this man who shot the guard yesterday. I'm not going to classify him with Republicans or Democrats in this country. They don't deserve that. They really don't. This man has his own category. His wife, his former wife, was quoted in one newspaper story that I read as saying this man has been hating and has been spewing hatred for 50 years. He didn't do it because he belonged to one political party or another. He did it because he has a distorted view of the country we live in and a distorted view of minorities.
Ted Koppel, NPR news analyst, joining us today from his home in Potomac, Maryland. Finally, Ted, is there anything that you think we can learn from this awful incident?
Again, I think if it were, it's not going to do that. It's going to frighten some people, but I'm urging people not to be frightened. And if you come to Washington, and if you have a chance to visit the Holocaust Museum, which has been visited, I gather now, by some 30 million people over the past 16 years, do it. It's an extraordinary experience, and it is a rebuke and a reproach to the kind of hate speech that this man apparently believed in and participated in. It's a great place. It is extraordinary that it exists in the capital of the United States, and everyone should take advantage of the opportunity to visit the Holocaust Museum.
Ted, as always, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR news analyst Ted Koppel, again with us from his home in Potomac, Maryland. Tomorrow at Science Friday, guest host Joe Palca will be here with a look at NASA's upcoming moon launch. Plus, could planets collide in our solar system? That and more tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.